Welcome, everyone, to Non-Random Thoughts. This is your host, Jim Fetzer. Today we're going to start with a few minutes reflection on this recent election, which I believe has probably extended some of our lifespans by a considerable amount. I've been astonished to hear that there are reports that the use of electronic voting machines may have deprived the Democrats of even more victories. But what happened here, I think, is tremendously significant. Donald Rumsfeld being replaced is tremendously important, but it's reasonable to expect that we're not going to see a lot of bipartisanship, even though the president on one day announces he's going to do everything he can to work in a cooperation with the Democrats. The next day he's announcing that on the agenda for the lame duck Congress is to confirm John Bolton, our ambassador to the United Nations, who's been extremely controversial, and that he wants to get the Surveillance Act passed by the government, too. Well, those are all going to be directly opposed by the Democrats, and it's going to lead to a considerable split and a great deal of partisanship. Stand by. We'll be right back. Sir, your host on Non-Random Thoughts. I would normally not take a call at this point in time, but start them at the top of the hour after interviewing my special guest today, who has a tremendous amount to say, but it's on the topic of 9/11, and I suspect that Jeff in Massachusetts, who's already called in, has a question about what I already had to say, so I'm going to take you now, Jeff. Are you there? Jeff from Massachusetts, are you there?
Oh, yes, I'm right here. How's it going?
Oh, just fine, Jeff. Speak up.
Oh, yes. Now, as far as 9/11 is concerned, do you think we'll ever get to the bottom of what occurred at 9/11, and do you think it'll ever be public one day?
Well, that's fantastic that you asked that, Jeff, because the guest I'm having on today is perhaps the single most qualified individual to be studying what happened on 9/11. Her name is Judy Wood. She has degrees in civil engineering, mechanical engineering, material structure science. So I just suggest, Jeff, why don't you sit back and listen to what Judy has to say today, and then call back at the top of the hour with questions you may have. Does that sound fair?
It sounds fair. I do thank you immensely, because I hear secular talk shows and they all say the same thing. 19 Arabs took two planes and rammed it into the building, and it's like, if you say a lie long enough, people will believe it.
Jeff, let me make a suggestion. Okay, go to Scholars for 9/11 Truth website, st911.org.
Yes.
Scroll down the right-hand side to events for today. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see that there are a whole set of slides and discussion, a part of a new study by Judy Wood and Morgan Reynolds, that's going to blow your mind away, okay? So you
All
can
right.
stay tuned. You stay tuned here. Listen to us and check out your computer. Look at the visuals while we talk to Judy Wood. It's my great pleasure to welcome to the show again Judy Wood, who has been teaching at Clemson in the Department of Mechanical Engineering, but it appears that her research on 9/11 was not something that Clemson was enthusiastic about, and she is no longer there on the faculty. Judy, are you here?
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, Judy, it's great to hear your voice.
Great to hear yours, too.
I got to tell you, I've been going through what you and Morgan have put together, and it's really blowing my mind away, okay?
It's very convincing, isn't it?
Yeah, well, it's I've only got started, Judy. I've only just got started. I'm just scratching the surface, and I'm just taking some of your images and integrating them into my basic set of slides, and I know there's going to be more I'm going to have to take in there. I mean, this is going to really lead to, you know, a much more thorough assessment and understanding of what actually happened on 9/11 in New York. I'm just convinced of that already. And you haven't said a word. So
I was tempted to answer that caller.
Yeah.
Are we ever going to get to the bottom of it? I think we have.
Okay, well, listen, I want to give you the chance to give a sketch to us for what you and Morgan have been doing and how far your research has gone, and make reference to the visuals you have there, because I've told everyone that they're up on our website, st911.org, and this is just a perfect opportunity for this discussion to take place.
Thanks. At the top of each page, I have a little menu so you can jump between the pages, not necessarily in order, and it's also at the bottom of the page.
Right.
You can jump around. I'm not sure if you're aware that I added the two appendices today.
Well, you mentioned it. I have been traveling. I'm actually out in Tucson, which is why the show got started late, because the caller, you know, I wasn't at my usual phone.
Right.
So our coordinator had to get my number out here in Tucson and give me a buzz. and then track you down. So, you know, we got a little slow start, but I saw your email, Judy, that you have these two new appendices, and I'm very eager to see them, but I haven't had a chance to read them yet.
They're worth looking at.
Well, tell us what you got. You know, just start anywhere you want so that we can make it accessible.
Well, how
you, you have a gift for metaphor and for making, you know, visual, verbal pictures that are visually fascinating. So I say, it's like when you talk about the two buildings coming down as though they were two gigantic trees turning to sawdust from the top down. That's an image once one hears, they can never forget.
Oh, better than that.
Okay.
Better than that. They were like two tall trees that turned into sawdust from the top down.
Yes.
They were turned into dust from the top down. They did not collapse.
Yeah.
Let's get that straight. They did not collapse.
So I've emphasized that point many times since I became familiar with your work. That's absolutely right.
They're blown to kingdom come.
I want you to know I've even brought Steve Jones around to the point where now he doesn't say collapse. He says destroyed instead of collapse, Judy.
Ah.
And from the top down, okay? So I consider that to be a contribution between
you,
me, and Steve, okay?
Great. For short terms, I say they go poof.
They go poof. Yeah.
Poof.
Well, you got wonderful diagrams there. I love your diagrams.
Pardon me?
I love your diagrams.
Let's see. Where you should start is the evidence.
Yeah.
We always start with the data. If you look at what happened first, not how it happened or why it happened.
Right.
Or who done it. That's all down the line. Just look at what happened and define what happened.
Right.
And if you start out with, okay, it could be a BB gun or slingshot or, you know, you list all the tools that you are aware of.
Yeah.
And then you try to pick the data to fit into that. Not good.
Yeah.
Just look at the data and see what the data tells you.
Yeah.
So I started categorizing the data in various sets, and Morgan has been just wonderful in bouncing the ideas off of and seeing what works and what, you know, what, you know, arguing back and forth on it. The biggest thing you see, well, there's quite a few different sets of data. I summarize them at the end. First of all, they got poofed, or they went away faster than they could possibly collapse.
Right, faster than free fall.
Correct.
Absolutely astonishing.
And that's something you've said that a lot of folks haven't caught on to, is that they went away, or they were destroyed faster than free fall of gravity in a vacuum. And this is incredible. And something else that we've learned today, what the energy involved was immense.
Let me ask you just a point of clarification on that, Judy. My understanding is, you know, with 110-story buildings, that in a vacuum it would be about 9 seconds.
9.22.
And that with air resistance, it would be more like maybe 12 to 13.
Oh, a lot more than that.
And it could be vastly more than that because, you know, depending on the shape of the object and all that, I mean, if you had a piece of paper, it might take forever to reach the ground.
I actually got a Steinway grand piano measurements.
Oh, did you? Because you
know,
I used to talk about dropping a grand piano off the top of one of these
buildings. See, the story is you put two grand pianos on the roof.
Yeah.
The roof just begins to move. You pitch one overboard.
Yeah.
And you see which one gets to the ground faster.
Oh, that's good. So you got the one, yeah. Okay, nice
comparison.
The one sitting
on the roof of the building? The one that gets pitched overboard because of the surface area, and you have to, you know, estimate what the drag coefficients are. But a friend of mine went through these calculations, and they came out to around 30 seconds.
30 seconds?
Yeah.
Oh, Judy, that's astounding.
Yeah, so to get the grand piano deck, because it was a very lightweight per surface area, it's like a 7.5 foot long grand piano, the Steinways.
Uh-huh.
So, it's definitely going to go a lot slower. It's not going to be before 2 seconds.
Fantastic.
So that's the first issue. The next one is...
And just to remind our listeners, you know, I mean, when you're talking about free fall, that means with no resistance whatsoever, not with 80 floors of cold steel or 96 floors of cold steel or, in another metaphor that you've used, Judy, another comparison, another source wrote to me and said, well, if you saw the top of the Eiffel Tower, you know, something happened to it. Maybe there was a fire on the top of the Eiffel Tower, and the top of the Eiffel Tower started to collapse. Would you expect the rest of the Eiffel Tower to fall? And the reason the Eiffel Tower is so beautiful is you see all those more massive structures supporting the whole edifice at the bottom. And of course, the World Trade Center, although it looks symmetrical, it has those more massive supports at the bottom, parallel to the Eiffel Tower.
Yeah, and it's a lot bigger, too. So is it going to topple?
That's
and
right.
So the towers are more likely to topple if something's going to happen.
Yeah, go ahead.
But the big issue I began noticing was that the protective bathtub that's around the base of the building.
Yes.
It goes to about 7 basement levels, sub-basements below the ground level, and it makes a sealed container for both towers. And it sits, and the towers were anchored in bedrock. What's important about that?
Well, what's the relation of the bathtub to the bedrock?
The towers are built in bedrock, but the bedrock is below the water table.
Yeah.
On the Hudson River.
Right.
And the ground is wet there.
Yes.
And so to protect this, they built the sealed water container around, or to seal out the water around the complex.
Now,
it's not the entire complex.
Now, we know there were these massive explosions in the sub-basement that I've always assumed were...
Wait a minute.
Yeah.
Don't jump to that conclusion yet. The PATH trains that come over from New Jersey go under the Hudson River and come up onto bedrock in that bathtub. So imagine if
the subways, the subways, yeah.
Oh, no, they're PATH trains. They're different than the subway
PATH train, but it's a subway, yeah. I mean, I've taken it.
Right, the subways are outside of the bathtub, the north-south one.
Oh, okay.
They're in the little bathtub.
Go ahead.
So if you have these 500,000-ton buildings over a quarter mile tall, and if you slam them down in that bedrock that PATH train tunnel empties up onto, connects up onto, you're going to do some damage.
Yes.
You're going to end up spring a leak probably in that PATH train tunnel.
Uh-huh.
It's going to flood the bathtub, flood the whole Manhattan.
Uh-huh. Okay, Judy, here we go. We're going to take a... We'll be right back with my special guest, Judy Wood. Don't go away. Well, it's a great pleasure to have my special guest on Non-Random Thoughts, Judy Wood, who's giving us an analysis of what actually happened on 9/11 to the World Trade Center. And Judy, I'm beginning to appreciate the significance of the bathtub. If the bathtub had cracked or been ruptured, it would have been
toast for New York City.
Yeah. Say again?
It'd be toast for New York City. It's flat out lower Manhattan.
Really. This is amazing. This is fascinating.
And so you got to protect that bathtub.
So you got to protect the bathtub. So this really took a lot of ingenuity, didn't it, to figure out how to destroy.
Oh, it was a beautiful job.
How to destroy the World Trade Center without damaging the bathtub.
So you can't get over a quarter mile tall buildings weighing over 500,000 pounds, tons, and slam them down on the bedrock.
Yeah. You can't do that because you're going to damage
the bathtub,
which is built on the bedrock.
So let's look at the evidence of how hard they did slam down. One was the equivalent of a 2.1 magnitude earthquake on the Richter scale, and the other was a 2.3 equivalent.
Right.
And that was recorded at Lamont Doherty. We would like to see the other data because this data looks, you know, kind of filtered because earlier that year in January there was a 2.4 earthquake in Manhattan, and it looked a lot different. So they it looks like they filtered it somehow, or it's an entirely different type of event.
Okay. If there was in other words, there may have been a bona fide legitimate 2.4 earthquake earlier in New York, and what we're recording here, 2.1, 2.3, actually had a different cause because it registers effects in a different way.
Yeah, it was smooth. But there was some event that happened.
Yeah.
And the fact that they're different for the two towers that weigh basically the same is bizarre because it's a logarithmic scale.
Yeah, I thought it was very odd, too. Continue.
So it's as though one tower is like half the weight of the other tower.
Ha.
That doesn't make sense.
Because when you go from 2.1 to 2.3, you're actually... What, it's 10 times greater each time you go up one digit, right?
Right, so it's really 63%. 2.1 is like 63% of the energy of 2.3.
Wow.
So let's look at some other data to see what happens elsewhere with buildings falling down. I looked at the Kingdome. I've heard Stephen Jones mention he looked at it, so I looked at it, and Oh, that comparison is really amazing. That is not built on bedrock.
Yeah.
That's built on what washes downstream from up above. It's softer soil. It's kind of like jello.
Uh-huh.
You know, right on the waterfront there.
Uh-huh.
And when they blew it up, controlled demolition in 2000, I think it was March 26th, it made a 2.3 earthquake.
Really?
The equivalent of.
The kingdom.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's a whole lot closer to the ground, and it's less material.
It's much less massive, a lot closer to the ground, and came up a 2.3.
Yes. Plus, the recording devices were reading the information through this jello-like surface. So, if anything, it's going to be bigger if it was sitting on bedrock.
It would have been bigger had it been sitting on bedrock because it was kind of cushioned by virtue of this
jelly-like substance. So we'll just pretend it was on bedrock.
Uh-huh.
But we know that it would have been, that if there's any difference, it's going to make the World Trade Center look even worse.
Uh-huh.
So if it's identical to Tower 1's, quote, collapse, let's look at the potential energy difference. I looked at the mass of each building.
Yes.
One's four times the mass of the other.
Yeah.
But then the center of mass of the towers is like 7.5 times the center of mass of the kingdom. So
you mean the center of mass in relation to the ground?
Right. If you drop the
relative distance of the center of mass.
Right. If you drop the entire World Trade Center from the same height as the kingdom, it still is four times the mass. But then you drop it from a higher, higher up, it's going to make a bigger bang.
Sure. Sure.
So the equivalent, those two factors together is 30 times the potential energy.
30 times?
Yeah.
Wow.
So you would expect to see something like a 3.8.
Wow.
Earthquake.
Wow. So something very funny is going on here. It did not collapse. I mean, this is another proof, along with your temporal proof, that it didn't collapse.
And in addition to that, the footprint of a World Trade Center building is one-tenth of the kingdom.
So the area, the actual area, right, geometrically.
Yeah, so it's going to put all that energy into one point.
Yes.
Might likely crack the bedrock.
Yeah. Dangerous situation if you want to protect the bathtub.
Yep.
Stand by, everybody. We're talking with my special guest, Judy Wood. We'll be right back. Judy, I got to say, what you're telling us is so hot, I can hardly believe it. I'm appreciating completely the role of the bathtub here. This is absolutely stunning. The fact that the execution of this program had to be conducted in such a way as to not damage the bathtub is the key to understanding the whole phenomenon.
Right.
Amazing.
And if you wanted to take those towers down by regular controlled demolition, it would be more expensive than building the towers to begin with. And you wouldn't be able to get an insurer. You wouldn't be able to hire anybody to do it.
You couldn't hire somebody to insure you if you were going to destroy them by
control. You would have to take it apart, like building it but unbuilding it. And it would be more expensive because now you have to worry about the asbestos.
That's right. And, in fact, hadn't there been an instruction from the Port Authority that Silverstein Properties had to do something about the asbestos the year 2007, maybe?
So, that's an interesting point that you notice the only buildings damaged that day, that were totally destroyed, had a prefix of WTC.
Isn't that remarkable?
Okay, getting back to
what precision? These terrorists, it's as though they wanted to destroy all and only buildings that had were identified with an address of World Trade Center 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7.
And essentially no spillage over into any adjacent buildings. Isn't that
just
cool?
Amazing. These terrorists are really quite phenomenal, aren't they?
Excellent.
Very exacting, very precise. You would think they had a thing in for the World Trade Center and all of its buildings.
Now, looking back at the potential energy issue and the earthquake, if that number is correct, let's look at the North Tower that made a 2.3 equivalent earthquake.
Yeah.
That's identical to the kingdom.
Yeah.
So if we decapitated the top 80% or so of the building and just left the bottom 20 floors,
yeah,
those collapsing would make a 2.3 earthquake.
Yeah.
Well, that's if they're all regular floors. So let's say it's not just about 20 floors, but a little bit more than that, but we get rid of all the contents and just leave the steel that's taller. Because you got to have something left at the end of the day, because it's going to look funny if you have nothing as a site. So they got to leave some steel. let's look at building 2, tower 2 and the 2.1 equivalent earthquake.
This is a south tower, of course, which fell first, although hit second.
Right. And that was by design. It needed to go first. It was the learning curve. But if you look at the bottom 16 floors, that would account for a 2.1 earthquake. Or
if the building had only been 16 floors high and had come down, it would have counted for a 2.1.
Right. If you poofed the rest of it.
If the rest had been destroyed somehow.
Decapitated and sucked up. Now, we know we didn't have any, marble lobby floors, desk chairs from the bottom 16 floors. So let's say all of the innards of the building were vaporized, except for the structural steel. How tall would the structural steel be? Well, it turns out about 36 floors of just structural steel would account for the 2.1. So that gives you an idea of their transition zone. 100% pulverization down to about 36 floors, and then they kind of transition into just leaving the structural steel below there. And there's a beautiful picture on my website. It's on page 3, the, quote, dustification page. I call it the snowball picture. It's a picture taken from behind the Bankers Trust building, where on the other side of the Bankers Trust is WTC2. And at that point, it's just a little bit lower. It looks like a snowball. It's all turned into a ball. It's a little bit lower than the roof of Bankers Trust, which is a 40-story building. And you look, and there's nothing that's fallen below that point. And you look above, and it's missing about 75 stories. They're gone. Where'd they go? They didn't fall down. You look, and they're kind of wafting up to heaven. it just goes up. Dust goes up.
The dust cloud you're talking about.
Yeah.
But sometimes has been described as smoke.
Right. Well, they had to have smoke for the smoke screen.
Yeah.
So you couldn't tell, because if you had a big mushroom cloud appearing in the clear blue sky, that looked kind of obvious.
Yeah.
So you have the smoke from smudge pots or whatever.
Yeah.
And then when the tower starts turning into a mushroom cloud, it kind of merges into it and nobody notices. But if you look at that snowball picture, you see no building above there and, perfectly normal building below there. And it looks like that's about 36 floor. And at that point, I believe they transition into leaving some solid material.
I used a different mode of demolition from the 36 down.
That's off on the knob.
Pardon?
And, if you notice, up to that point, you only had pieces of aluminum cladding flying off.
Which is very odd, in my opinion. Why should the aluminum cladding not be destroyed, too?
Yeah, it's different materials are affected by different frequencies.
Yes.
The best example I can think of is your microwave oven.
Yes.
You put your food on a paper towel, stick it in there. The food gets cooked, but the paper towel doesn't.
Yes. And now, of course, you're implying a particular kind of causation here, which we haven't now talked about until this point.
Right, because thinking you could energize something some way like that. So it's possible, that's just a piece of data I'm noticing, that you have this aluminum cladding flying out, but no other pieces. You do see some, I call them wheat checks, that's what they look like.
Right.
The steel wheat checks, those outer clusters.
Perimeter.
Yeah, the columns.
Steel columns, which are interlocking, and they create a pattern not unlike wheat checks.
And as they're flying out, they're turning into dust.
Yeah, you've got some video there that's just astonishing where you can actually see them turning into dust. You can actually see them turning into dust.
And someone's wondering how it gets done. Well, I was thinking of the Tacoma Narrows Bridge. Everyone who's been in a freshman engineering course has seen this video. Maybe everyone in the world has seen this video, where they built this beautiful bridge, suspension bridge.
Yeah.
It was strong enough to handle the winds.
Right.
But they overlooked one thing.
The
wind would excite the natural frequency of the bridge.
And cause oscillation.
Right, and it excited the natural frequency of the bridge, and the bridge started going to oscillations, which built and built and built and built, till the bridge went into self-destruction.
Go ahead.
So let's say you can aim a beam at steel, and on the molecular level, it triggers the natural frequency of its molecules, which start building, building, till it self-destructs and explodes. It's on a very small scale compared to a big scale, but that just for mental image, think of that idea. So you initiate it, and then it...
So instead of a horizontal like the narrow, you're talking vertical.
I'm talking
vertical
about
oscillations,
energy.
Or are they horizontal oscillations?
I'm just talking about energy-wise.
Yeah.
We also have swing sets where you push a kid on the swing.
Yeah.
And you push at the right stroke, you get him swinging bigger. If you push him in the wrong part of the stroke, you stop him.
Yeah.
It's that kind of idea.
Yeah.
Working with the system, if you can energize it somehow, so that it seems reasonable that you could have different frequencies that would affect different things differently.
This is going to require an astonishing source of energy.
Uh-huh. That's
thing like
for those who doubt that such a thing exists, that's what I posted on my webpage this afternoon. Is there a picture of such a gizmo?
Yeah, we need to talk about it. Yeah, we're talking about here a directed energy weapon, a high-tech weapon that can direct energy in the form of waves that can be concentrated and can have broader or narrower amplitude, correct?
Yeah, who knows that, you know, what frequencies? We don't need to even answer that. You know, it's folks have said, well, how much energy would it take to pulverize the building? My response is the building not pulverized? Is there any questions? And, you know, it's pulverized, so it obviously happened.
Yeah.
Just because you don't know of the gizmo doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Yes.
But there is evidence that it exists.
Yes.
But going back to the bathtub thing, I think you can see the reason if, you know, what I calculated, just some rough calculations, something down to about the 20th floor, if they poof everything above that and it wafts away, then they can afford to drop that bottom part.
Because you're only going to get a 2.1 to 2.3 level earthquake phenomenon.
Right.
Now, what about Building 6, Judy? It has this very peculiar gouge in the center. It's very symmetrical.
Oh, it's not a gouge. Oh, that was really kind of interesting. It's you could even see the diameter.
It's like it's carved out.
Well, it's scalloped around the edge. It's made up of a whole lot of circular cutouts, kind of like if you're going to take a soil sample, a core soil sample, so you stick down this instrument and bring up a cylindrical, core-shaped sample of the soil.
Does it suggest that the form of the energy when it's directed is circular?
Yes.
And that it was directed down into 6 maybe by accident or intentionally?
No. There's a good reason for 6.
Tell me.
Remember, got to worry about the bathtub.
Yeah.
Morgan wanted to name the paper initially... putting the bathtub under protective custody.
Yeah.
I think that's a good name.
Well,
once the whole ordeal is finished and you need to clean up, you need to take down Building 6.
Yes.
How are you going to take it down? Controlled demolition? It's going to fall down and go boom right next to the most critical bathtub wall, closest to the Hudson. We can't have that.
So you can't afford that, so you got to prime it. You got to prime the pump, as it were,
by taking out
a part of the building that will enable it to be brought down in a way that won't damage the bathtub.
You take out half the mass. You look down that hole, it's empty. That stuff's gone. It's not down at the bottom of the hole. It's out.
I know. I mean, you know, it's so bizarre. Once you notice this, you have to ask and be scratching your head. How in God's name could that happen?
I've got two other fascinations. One is the hole in the street. The other was the toasted cars.
Yes.
I think you know how long I've had that fascination.
Yes.
But let's deal with the hole in the street. What I posted today was pictures of a guy climbing down into the hole.
Yes.
And that hole in the street goes right up to the wall of WTC2, and there's another hole adjacent to it that's even bigger that goes right into the center of the basement of WTC2.
Well, what's going on here?
There's nothing. There's nothing down there.
Yeah, why'd they take that out?
That was a practice run. That was the first building they'd ever done this to in such a big way. And that was the practice run, I believe, going up the learning curve. And whoops, got the knob, you know, cranked up a little too
much. When was that done?
That was the first one. WTC 2?
Yeah.
I believe the sequence of events is WTC 2 is getting zapped, but remember that top that tips over?
Yep. 34.
A year and a half or 2 years ago, I analyzed it with a particular video.
Yes.
That's on my webpage. That I decided that they got their wires crossed. They, oops, accidentally triggered one before the other.
Uh-huh.
You know, they meant to trigger a floor lower. Uh-uh. They meant to tip it.
The reason being?
They tipped it over building 4, which is outside of the big bathtub.
Yes.
And then they could blow the heck out of it.
In order to damage 4?
And they had a shorter building to bring down.
They wanted to use 2 to bring down 4?
They didn't care about 4. It's only a 9-story building.
Uh-huh.
And it's toast anyway.
Uh-huh.
Let's think about it. If you're going to bring down building 1 first, if it tips south, some shrapnel might go over and hit building 2, which was going to make it trickier to bring down. If it tips north, it goes into the Verizon building. If it tips west, it goes into WFC3. If it tips east, it also, trash would be hitting building 2.
Just for clarification for our listeners, WFC is World Financial Center, which are buildings separate than the World Trade Center.
They're across the street. And now if you do building 2 first, if it goes west, you interfere with building 1. If it goes north, you interfere with building 1. If it goes south, you hit Bankers Trust. If it goes east, heck, it only messes up building 4. And you get all this spillover zone to practice in. So you tip over the top of building 2, blow the heck out of it, obliterate all of building 4 right below it. You didn't want it anyway. And then you have a shorter building to bring down or to take apart. It makes it an easier thing to manage. You also get a little bit more experience. Something I've just recently noticed is a building that never gets talked about much, and I hope you don't notice, is building 3. While they're poofing building 2, they tried to poof 3, but they messed up. And there's a wonderful person who took a beautiful picture of building 3. It was their last picture before they were killed when building 1 went poof. When I saw the picture a couple years ago, I knew it was important, but I didn't understand it then, and I do now. It's the greatest piece of evidence. Bill Biggert's picture. And we owe his family and his friends a great deal of thanks for making it available. It's powerful.
Well,
anyway,
tell us why it's so important.
Well, it shows how they messed up. They only had it half done. I think they tried to do to it what they did to building 6, which was take out the middle, because people on the street won't notice. But building 3... they went all the way through the walls. So it's got this big, huge bite out of it. Huge bite. Also, while they're doing the building, there's another picture. I don't know if I believe it, but I kind of do. It's from NIST. It was in the NIST report. It shows the steel actually turning, kind of liquefying as it's falling. There's this brown blob that's trailing off the end of the brown steel. And there's some other interesting anomalies in there, as well as the roof line becomes warped over in that one area, where in the next picture you can see that big bite take it out. And you can also see there's no debris below.
Judy, do you think there was more than one of these weapons in operation at the same time? I mean, were some of these things going on simultaneously with two different sources of energy?
And there's at least 2 different diameters I see.
So you got 2 different size or configuration on the energy beam that's being directed at the building.
Right. And one of the beams went over and accidentally hit the front of the Bankers Trust building. You see that long gouge in the front?
Yeah.
That got toasted by a beam.
Stand by, everybody. We'll be right back with my special guest, Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on Non-Random Thoughts with my special guest, Judy Wood. And I must say, I think we're finding out, Judy, what happened on 9/11. I'm just blown away by your work, I think. This is the most fascinating development in the history of the study of 9/11. You got to tell us more.
There's a whole lot of different pieces of information. I tried to organize it on the web page by topic, and I've now added little name tags under the Beam 1, Beam 2, and so forth pages so that you know, you can remember where what was covered where, like dustification.
So you're drawing an inference from the damage to the location of the cause.
Yeah, like I covered different topics.
I'm gonna make a wild guess, Judy. I'm gonna presume that these beams had to be located in Building 7.
Nope, I don't think so.
Really?
They came from above.
Really? Planes?
No, I'm not comfortable speculating that far. I think it's very likely it's in orbit.
Oh, really?
A stationary, you know.
Oh, Judy. Oh, my. This is huge.
They tried it out in 1991.
This is huge, Judy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is huge.
Guess what? They're the diameters of their optics are about the size of those holes. Imagine that.
Oh, my God. Is this? And, of course, it's a laser-type beam, which is why you can keep it from expanding. I mean, it travels in straight lines, right? So it has minimal expansion.
Well, it depends on how your optics are tuned. You can have it expanding or contracting or, you know, you put lenses in the path. Or you can have it parallel.
It's probably best
to have it parallel so that you know what width it is.
You know, at one point the United States was in agreement that against the militarization of space.
Ah, did you realize the timing of the release of that information? I was sensing, I don't know why, I get the sixth sense.
Yeah.
You know how I needed to put this up before the paper was done?
Yes.
I just felt the important need to do that, and I felt for protection,
yes,
too. I went on a radio show by Ambrose Lane, and he was great. Let me announce it there that I was going to be putting up this webpage.
Yes.
And the next day, out in the paper comes this announcement that space has the ban against weaponizing space has now been abolished. And,
of course, they love to do all this stuff retrospectively. You know, when they get caught with their pants down, they
uh-huh.
pass some rule or policies that says it was all right to have your pants down.
And did you see what came out in the Washington Post the day after I spoke about this in Seattle? They showed, it doesn't work, though.
Judy, we'll be right back with you. Stand by and my special guest, Judy Wood, on Non-Random Thoughts. Your host, Jim Fetzer. Jim Fetzer, your host on Non-Random Thoughts, back on with my special guest, Judy Wood. Judy, this is just stunning, absolutely stunning stuff. Tell me, you say they tested this thing in 1991?
The ability, that's the optics. They were sending it from the Earth up to a satellite and back down, and they found that it transmitted a much better quality beam than they thought they needed. That information is on my website, as well as this other one, which even shows the price tag.
Is the satellite used more as for reflective purposes?
That was just trying out the optics.
Yeah.
Then there's this other document that it was released in 98, showing that 2 years before that, they'd actually shot down a missile with this gizmo.
Using the space technology.
Yep.
They shot down a missile.
Yeah, and then, we don't know what we don't know. We don't know what's up there circulating around in orbit.
Right.
And this is how much we do know.
But you can see how this would instill in them a sense, you know, people like Bush and Cheney and Rumsfeld, a sense of grandiosity, as though they could rule the world, which they're starting out, you know, they've been attempting to do.
I almost
by
feel
executing,
like...
executing the blueprint outlined by Project for the New American Century.
Yeah, why have they allowed me to put this story together so easily. And I think the reason is, I think they've wanted to schedule the timing of the release of it, try to slow it down so that, you know, once they take hold, releasing this serves their purpose.
Can you imagine leaving the military control of the world in the hands of George W. Bush and Dick Cheney?
I think it goes beyond that.
This is terrifying.
I don't know who they is, and I don't want to define they.
Yes.
But whoever they are showing off, look at what we can do. Don't mess with us. And be afraid, be very afraid. To see what we could do.
This is stunning, stunning.
That is scary.
This is stunning stuff, Judy.
And so the price of this, this is the SBL project, space-based laser, versus the... ground-based laser, GBL. It turns out the space-based one is a whole lot cheaper.
Really?
Yeah. The bottom end is $17 billion, the upper end is $81 billion, and the ground base, it goes up to $171 billion.
And why the difference?
There's a lot more tricky stuff they have to do with it. And the biggest challenge, in reading through this article, the biggest challenge was getting it, you know, so they could launch it with the current technology, because, you know, with its size.
You know, we're talking about James Bond quality, you know, technology here.
Now, mind you, I looked at the data. Only looked at the data. What was the data telling me? The data led me to this conclusion. There's nothing else that I could imagine could fit it. I didn't even know such a thing existed. I just found that it does exist, and that's creepy.
But
looking at those holes and looking at the toasted cars, how could those cars that are like half mile away, they're over on FDR Drive?
Why were they toasted?
My area of expertise is optics.
Yeah.
The visual light, the visual energy, and I know how you can get accidental reflections that bounce around the room. And so, okay.
This was a kind of spillover effect?
Yeah, and if you have canyons.
Optical spillover effect?
Canyons between the buildings. You can get
things
reflecting down the canyon.
Stand by, we'll be right back with my special guest, Judy Wood. This is Jim Fesser, your host on Non-Random Thoughts with my special guest, Judy Wood. Judy, let me ask you this question and draw a comparison. In doing cataract surgery with lasers, you can control, you know, exactly the depth or extent of the laser, so you can get the rods and cones to align the way you want them to align. I'm presuming that a space-based laser would have a similar capacity where you could exactly calibrate the depth of the laser and thereby control, you know, how deeply you went into a building or other structure.
Yeah, except one problem. They don't have a lot of data on having done this in the past.
Yeah. So they're not going to be able to too finely calibrate it.
Right.
But they're going to destroy the buildings to the extent that when whatever's left, when it collapses by a more or less conventional demolition, it's not going to create an earthquake effect that's going to be so substantial that it's going to crack the bathtub.
Correct.
And because they're inexperienced doing this with space, they're going to have some glitches.
Right.
They're going to have some cuts or scars across buildings because they did the laser from space and they weren't exact enough, so they got this damage done. But most people won't be able to figure out what the world it was because it's from a cause that they never imagined even exists.
Right. Building 6, you know how all the holes are interior?
Yes.
And if this is not in the visual range, this energy source, people standing on the streets aren't going to see it.
Right.
And those buildings were evacuated, so you won't hear people telling about it.
The lasers are visually, they're invincible to the naked eye?
Right.
They travel space?
Yeah, the wavelength they're using is not visual.
Could there be a type of photography that could pick it up if you were to process it the right way?
Probably not regular photographs. Maybe another kind of, you know, recording device. But in one of the figures that I have on page 3, it shows evidence of it right then and there. You can see the top of building 3, of WTC 3, warping and starting to liquefy.
Yeah. I've looked at that photograph, yes. I haven't quite been able to piece it all together yet. That's a very complicated photograph.
And you know that building's whole at that moment. And you know after WTC-2 is gone away, you have no rubble. From Bill Biggert's picture, there's no rubble in the ground. But you have these big vertical cuts into Building 3. When I first saw Building 3, like, several years ago, I still hadn't figured out the lay of the land yet. And I was thinking that was Building 6. And the WTC-7 was behind it.
Yeah.
Because it's got vertical cutouts. But I knew that picture was important, but I didn't quite know why. And then a week or so ago, a friend sent me that picture and said, what do you think of this? I'm like, whoa, now I know what that picture means.
saying the order in which they took out the buildings was crucial in order to avoid damaging other structures in the vicinity.
Well, while they were doing 2, they did part of 3. I think that was a mess up. I think they meant to do it like they did 6, which was do it interior or either that or wipe the whole thing out. But it's so obvious where it's got left with a big bite out of it.
Yeah.
And then, you know, but to practice, to make it an easier start on the learning curve, they tipped over the top, over four, blew the heck out of four. You see, there's nothing left of four just about, except for the north wing, which is just like surgically removed from the rest, from the main building that is not there anymore. And now, mind you, the first sub-basement is a mall, right below the ground level. And that's where Roadrunner was, in the Warner Brothers store, a big life-size statue of Roadrunner and
his
two buddies, and they don't have a scratch on them.
Really?
I also have a picture on my webpage I put up this afternoon, or a couple of pictures, of these guys looking for people to rescue.
Yeah.
Walking to the mall. So
the
mall in the first sub-basement under Building 4 was fairly okay in most places, but they did kind of burn through in a bunch of places. Oops. You know,
doesn't this rods and cones things with cataract surgery then apply here as a model?
Yeah, but they don't have this thing calibrated yet. But
no, I got it. But, I mean, in general, that's what they're trying to do. They're trying to control the depth of the destruction.
Right.
Look, Judy, if they'd actually hit the bathtub, they would have destroyed it, right? They would have taken out, vaporized.
They did take a little bit of bite out of the top edge of the bathtub back in that corner. It goes under Building 4.
But they knew at all costs they had to avoid that kind of damage.
But that was just sort of superficial damage. They didn't do any structural damage to the integrity of the thing. But also they learned with that. Imagine that 30 minutes until they poofed Building 1, all the regrouping and recalibrating they did a marvelous job in Building 1. Because remember, they couldn't tip it too far one way or the other. And Building 1, they took right down to the ground, but not below the ground.
This has got to be Pentagon stuff, don't you think? I mean, this has got to be NSA Pentagon stuff. I mean,
I'm not
NSA
going there.
Pentagon CIA.
I'm not going there. Whoever they was, it was a beautiful job to do in the blind. You know, they've never done a building a quarter mile tall before.
Judy, we got a lot of callers calling in already.
All right.
If it's okay with you, should we take a few?
Sure.
Okay, Troy from West Virginia. Troy, you're on the air. Are you there?
Yeah. Were you saying that from outer space they were sending in lasers to cut a few buildings? I understand you're right.
As though that is the most probable explanation given the data that Judy has been examining.
You said lasers from space?
No, I'm saying energy, an energy beam, a beam of energy.
I use the phrase laser.
Energy beams are lasers from space.
Yeah.
Yeah. From up above somewhere.
You don't like that, Troy?
Well, no, I'm just also wondering, what makes you think the 200 technical experts for NIST would be wrong and your guess would be accurate?
Troy, go to our website, st911.org. We got a half a dozen dismissals. We're talking about cutting-edge research here, Troy. I'm not going back to NIST. They've been covering it all up, okay? Thanks for calling, Troy. You check out our website. You'll get the answers to your questions. Jane from Maryland. Jane, are you there?
Yeah, I think your previous call points up, the real issue here. First, I want to thank Judy for doing this work. Her and the whole team of engineering and physics people who've been working on this, and especially Morgan Reynolds. You know, I haven't read the entire site. It's voluminous.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a couple semesters worth of material in there to go through. I was going to ask you about the Calder statue in front of WTC-7, which showed damage of real high damage that it could only be caused from super, super high-intensity heat or pressure. I was going to ask you about the jumpers from the towers and what might have triggered that
The statue in front of WTC-7, it was made of steel, metal, and if we had toasted cars, there's no question as to why that would be toasted, too. And I've noticed this beam seems to like steel, or big blocks of steel, like engine blocks, it's attracted to. Now, as for the jumpers, what I saw in those pictures was that the people who were jumping, they felt that was their best chance. For some reason, they felt that was their best chance for survival, like maybe a chopper would fly out there and put a net and catch them.
What would be the symptoms of the use of a microwave weapon in terms of internally cooking the organs of any people who might be hanging near the facade of the building?
Well, they seem to have done much more than that, right, Judy? They just pulverized the people.
The building is, the material is not there. the previous caller we're talking about cover-ups, and something I wanted to mention is there's a very various layers of cover-ups that we've been peeling through. The biggest, easiest, simplest, biggest one that hits us in the face is this story about all the steel that was sent to China. When was it hauled away? You know, before the dust settled, or, you know, 10 seconds after the event, the steel is not there.
Well, you mean there was no formal ceremony
to
commemorate when it was hauled away? It was done in the dead of night, supposedly? Is that what they're telling us?
No. She's saying the steel was
never there.
Particularized. It was destroyed.
Well, but obviously...
It was destroyed, so it wasn't there to be hauled off.
Well, they must
have that's their story, the cover story for why there's no steel there.
This thing is layered in cover stories, and that really brings me to the heart of this. Your previous caller, I think, pointed something up. I appreciate the research that's been done here, and especially, you know, Professor Fetzer, I appreciate your reaffirmation here at the scientific method. This is really, as your prior caller pointed out, this is really about the state of our commitment in American civilization to a 500-year tradition of the scientific principles of the Enlightenment, of scientific method, of all the things that have been dragged through the dirt now in the academic community. I mean, think about the impact of this in terms of the engineering and physics departments at our major universities, at the service institutions of the military, in the media. The reference to NIST that was made by your earlier caller, he should go out there and watch that press conference that NIST held, where Cheyenne Sunder stood there and lowered his face and looked at the ground and shifted from one foot to another as he was confronted, Nico Haupt was there confronting him, asking him about the evidence of controlled demolition and asking him about WTC-7, which he refused to even address and which is not even mentioned in the NIST report. So we have to take, you know, it's the community of activists, we've got to take this material that Judy has done and her colleagues have done, and we've got to take this as a weapon into the battle space of academia, of the media, and confront them with it and make them deal with it, because this is really about the future. You know, the whole world knows this.
Judy, this is a wonderful call from you, Jane. I want to thank you for calling. Stand by. We'll be right back with my special guest. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on Non-Random Thoughts, with my special guest, Judy Wood. Judy, this is fantastic stuff. Let's take another caller, Peter in Canada. Peter, are you there?
Yeah, I just had two quick questions.
Go
ahead. One is, what is Judy's website?
Oh, Judy, is on st911.org, but it may also be elsewhere, Judy.
It's janedoe0911.tripod.com.
Okay. All right. My...
No W's.
Okay. Have you or anyone calculated if the buildings had collapsed from gravity, which obviously they didn't, but if they actually did, what roughly would have been the height of the mass of the material?
One ballpark value is about, 12% of the building's height, which is exactly what we see with Building 7. Yeah, six floors. That's about 12.5% of the building's height.
Six floors of 48.
Yeah, 47.
47, right.
So that's what we would expect. So what's 12% of 110? That's, like 13 floors at least you expect to see
here.
Yeah.
But you know those big, I call them pitchforks? They're tridents at the bottom where the three outer columns come into one. And they're like 10 feet on center at ground level. The big lobby level has these big, arches that you walk through. You can see those right down to the ground in the pictures from ground zero. And so where's the steel? Where's the rubble? And
Peter,
we looked
at
the basement.
Yep, yeah.
Anything else?
No, that's all I had. Thanks.
Good, I'm glad you called. Luke in Iowa. Are you there, Luke?
Great show.
Yeah, please.
Yeah,
fantastic.
Yeah, it is fantastic. I wanted to ask Judy if she read an article by Dr. Ed Ward.
Yes, I did.
Okay, and he pointed out it might have been micronukes, third or fourth generations, that were relatively clean nuclear explosions, and that they used them as a shaped charge, putting some type of cowling around them, and that might explain Building 3 something being chewed out of it. If they could, if the charge escaped its containment and went over in that direction, it could have affected that building. And it would explain a lot of the loss of the mass, too, in terms of the heat of the explosion vaporized the moisture in the concrete.
The energy, maybe, but that energy would also have flown into the bathtub. It would have damaged the bathtub.
If they put it up high enough and shaped the charge where it went up, was directed only upward.
One charge that went off. This was like every single floor all the way down.
He's talking about using in the sub-basement, they used a micro-nuke as a shaped charge and blew it up through the center of the building.
That would cause the building to fall down like a traditional controlled demolition, and it would slam against the bedrock. And then you have this big 500,000-ton building going thud on the bedrock, which would surely damage the bathtub.
Yeah, you still have a lot. Even though you looked at all the dust, I remember the day watching it on TV when the actual event was going on, and the dust was literally so thick he could cut it with a knife.
Right.
Some kind of energy displaced an awful lot of the dust into the atmosphere. It was more than a controlled demolition.
Oh yeah, and controlled demolitions like Building 7, you see the roof line go down.
And I think there was relatively little dust afterwards.
Right, you know, it just falls down, go boom.
Yeah, and you know, there's a little bit of dust cloud when that's it, but whatever pulverized the concrete in that building.
It didn't pulverize that much. You look at the pictures on the website.
No, he's talking about 1 and 2, Jay.
Oh, okay.
1 and 2, yeah. Whatever hit them, it. And this Ed Ward had pictures of how the dust was like a rolling brown smoke, which was what you would get if it's kind of like the water mixed in with the dust. Whatever type of energy hit it, even a microwave could, if it was strong enough, could boil the moisture in the concrete and make it explode.
This is even more than just that. It's on the page 3, the dustification page.
Uh-huh.
You see the steel wheat checks flying through the air with the dust trailing out behind, and there's one picture where you see the brown steel turning into a brown blob kind of oozing out behind it. It's turning into sort of like liquid, as it's flying. It's bizarre.
Well, they've kept secret all their technological development over the years.
Absolutely
pretty well.
Right, Luke. They're 10 or 20 years ahead of us at all times, and we have no idea, and they can pull out one of these weapons and use it, and nobody has a ghost of an idea what's going on.
And that gives them the advantage to poo-pooing this, because if anybody brings it out, then you're just crazy. You know?
Right, that's exactly right. They have superior knowledge. They know what actually happened, but they can make anybody else look ridiculous.
We're grasping at straws trying to explain what happened, and if you come up with anything too exotic, they say, well, you guys are just wing nuts. You know.
Uh-huh.
Luke, it's a great call. Thank you so much for calling in. Stand by, everybody. We'll be right back with my special guest, Judy Wood. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on Non-Random Thoughts with my special guest, Judy Wood. And we have another stack of callers waiting to speak with you, Judy. So I'm going to invite Mike from Oklahoma to get on the air. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am indeed, Jim, and a wonderful show that you're having tonight. And, Judy, very, very interesting research that you've done. One comment about the bathtub, the slurry wall that butted up against the Hudson River was indeed damaged. It was moved up to 15 to 16 inches in places.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so there was an enormous amount of pressure.
That's what we're told, but I didn't see any evidence of that by looking. You know, I've looked at, thousands and thousands of pictures
mm-hmm.
of it, and I even have some pictures of the half-cleaned-out bathtub, and it looks fairly intact.
Judy, why would they want to claim that if it were false? I mean, just this particular part of it.
Oh, because it's part of the cover story.
Yeah.
Just like fires that burn for 3 months.
Yeah.
They have to explain that, wafting up dust. that dust was venting for months and months. He was even venting into March.
Okay, Mike, you want to say more?
Yeah, that was the question I was going to ask. Would a directed energy weapon account for the residual heat?
That residual dusting.
What I'm talking about, would a directed energy weapon account for the residual heat of the molten steel that we saw
What molten steel did you see?
Oh, the 3, 4, and 5 weeks later, Judy, are you disputing that too then?
I haven't seen it.
Well, you haven't seen evidence of it.
No, I haven't seen evidence of it.
So Mark Lazeau, among others, who was the head of controlled demolition, said, you know, there was this molten metal 3, 4, and 5 weeks later. That may well be a false report.
Right. I think that's part of the cover story. You know, you hear about molten metal in the basement? Go look at my website. It's a guy climbing down the ladder into this cold, damp basement.
Okay, he couldn't
he's
be doing that
in a
full of molten metal, could he?
Right. And there's a dog, the search dog that they had running around, you know, looking for people. And the guy, he's handing the dog out of this hole in the ground. The dog doesn't have singed fur, and the guy's dressed up in a winter parka.
What this means, Mike, is we have to think through the whole situation now all over again from this point of view to evaluate this hypothesis.
Right. Well, let me add one more thing here.
Yeah,
there are anecdotal reports, though, from workers at the site that were saying that, basically volunteers saying that they were changing boots out every 12 hours because
their boots were melting.
The boots. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'll say as much as I've seen evidence on the surface for the first day or so.
Heat on the surface.
There's little fires burning on the ground, on the surface. But what I say, like there's a picture I have from inside of Building 6. There's nothing there. What can be burning? It's
Mike,
really dusty.
Your question's a very good one. A very good one. I want to thank you for calling.
I think it's really good that we think about this.
Yeah.
You know, what they're telling us, don't accept it as fact.
Right, right, right. We got to rebuild this thing from the bottom up. Ellen in California. Are you there, Ellen? Ellen in California.
Well, I'm open to seeing the pictures.
Professor?
Yes.
I was wondering why no one ever talks about the 1989 lawsuit on the World Trade Center, and it was condemned.
Oh, wow.
New Jersey. If you go to Google and put New Jersey, now this is 1989, New Jersey World Trade Center lawsuit on asbestos and galvanic corrosion. They had a bid of over $5 billion to repair the World Trade Center floor by floor, or it had to be evacuated in 12 to 15 years.
12 to 15 years, yes.
Yeah, so
you're talking about you're talking compounding the motive. You're talking
about
how the buildings were white elephants.
Pardon?
You're talking about how the buildings were white elephants in need of incredibly expensive repair.
Exactly.
Compounding the motive.
Down and rebuilt.
Yeah. Good. I don't know about that lawsuit. I'm going to have to look into that. Everyone out there, this is worth pursuing. Google 1989 lawsuit.
1989 New Jersey, that's the key.
1989 New Jersey. Okay, get out there and Google, everybody. Get out there, you know, get it out and Google. 1989 New Jersey lawsuit, World Trade Center.
Yeah, asbestos and galvanic corrosion.
Excellent, Ellen. Thank you very much for calling.
You bet.
Hey, Ron in Oklahoma. Are you there, Ron?
Yeah, guys.
But go ahead.
Air Force recently announced testing of an airborne laser carried aboard a 727, which can be used to shoot down ICBM shortly after liftoff, which, by the way, some people believe was used to knock down the latest North Korean test missile.
Uh-huh. Right, so, to make the North Koreans think they don't have as good a missile as they actually have.
Well, could be. And also, just like you just got through saying, hey, by the time we find out about something, the technology is 20 or 30 years old.
Yeah. But I did all this research on the death of Paul Wellstone, and I became convinced that they used a high-tech weapon to overwhelm the electrical system and cause the solenoid switches to put the propellers on idle, which meant the plane had no forward thrust, and that was done using, you know, a type of device that most people don't even know exists.
EMPs.
Yeah.
Makes all the sense in the world to me.
Yeah, so I'm glad you called. You know, that makes great sense about the Korean launch, that they could have done that. I think that makes perfect sense. And, you know, any way you look at it, it's intimidating. You know, either the Koreans screwed up or they see that we have some massive capacity that they didn't imagine we possessed. I think that's an excellent observation. Ron, I want to thank you for calling.
Thank you. Bye.
Russ in West Virginia. Are you there, Russ?
Hello, Jim.
Big.
Don't take me the wrong way here. I'm surrounded by dumbness in West Virginia. So I'm sorry I'm calling from the West Virginia number.
I thought Jay Rockefeller and, you know, our senior
and Robert Byrd,
all they could.
All
they've
of West Virginia.
Billions of bucks into West Virginia.
All of West Virginia can't find anybody in all the last 20 years to run for a congressman other than Robert Byrd, something's really
Robert
wrong with
Robert Byrd has just been astounded as a pipeline for getting money and resources into West Virginia.
Yeah. So, all right, now this might be a little bit off, but let me ask you a question. You had a caller that called about the jumpers.
Yeah.
Okay, now I've got two questions here. What effect do you think the jumpers would have on the general public watching it? That's the first one. The second one was how much time was there existed from the last jumper to the time the buildings came down? My theory here, and I'm way out here, which I always am anyway, black ops. Did they jump or were they thrown for the building from the building for effect?
Well, you see some of them actually jumping. I mean, Judy, you go ahead and do this.
Yeah, I can see why some would decide to do that. Like there's on my webpage, there's a video I have of Tower 1 when Tower 2 is supposedly hit by something.
Mm-hmm.
And just before the explosion goes off in Building 2, which supposedly they tell us if an airplane hit on the backside, but we don't see it, that you see explosions going off in Tower 1 when the explosions go off in Tower 2.
Well,
and there's a guy who's waving a shirt out the window, and then when Tower 2 supposedly gets hit, he quits waving his shirt, and he drops his shirt.
Well, I just thought I'd bring it up because it's a possibility.
Yeah, so I think something was going on in that building that was encouraging them to jump, that they felt that was their best chance.
Mm-hmm. Black ops would do that, too.
Russ, let me say, coming up with alternative possible explanations is the hardest part of scientific inquiry. So it's always good to bring them up, even if they have a low probability. You want to explore the consequences of those hypotheses. So I'm very glad you brought them up.
Now, Jim, you know I'm paranoid.
That's good.
See you later.
Okay. Hey, thank you so much.
Good to be paranoid nowadays. Keeps you safe.
Yeah. This is a scary time we live in. Okay, James in Texas. James, are you there?
Hey, Jim. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
It's actually kind of piggybacks on what you just said. While I agree that exploring these possibilities that Judy's bringing up may be beneficial in the long run, I'm not sure it's helpful right this second or this moment in the 9/11 truth movement, because I think we're still kind of in a stage where we need to wake people up. And I'm not sure how fast we can wake people up if we start talking about space beam weapons. And you want to give Sean Hannity a reason to call you a conspiracy nut? I think that'll do it real quick. I mean, I'm not saying it's not true. You know, you make some pretty good points, Judy. But Jim, I would really seriously reconsider it if you're thinking about maybe your next appearance on Fox News. You know, bring some of this stuff up because it's pretty far out there. And
the point Judy makes about the bathtub is stunning. It's so obvious, it's so simple, and it's so powerful.
And
they had to do this in some
that.
Way. It had to be done in some fashion that wasn't going to damage the bathtub.
And this
right.
is the
and,
truth
and there's only going to be severe
reason.
Limitations on how that can be done.
I'm not sure about that, Jim. I think if you put enough, high-powered explosives and just blow everything out away, out of the bathtub and reduce all of the concrete to dust, there's not a whole lot of mass left there. I mean, I understand she's done, a lot of calculations, and I haven't gone through all of them in detail. But, I mean, if you blow up all the concrete and blow up, a lot of the mass out of the footprint, which is exactly what we saw, I don't think it would, cause as much damage as perhaps, the conventional controlled demolition where they just used enough explosives to bring down the building. If you put more than enough explosives in there to where it just turns everything into very fine dust, I could see that being an alternative hypothesis. I mean, I haven't obviously done any calculations
frequently emphasize, it's one thing to refute the government's official position. It's another
right.
and far more difficult to explain what actually happened.
Absolutely. I totally agree with you. And I just, like I said, I'm not trying to stifle this line of inquiry.
No, I understand.
Just,
you're talking about how it flies politically. I understand.
Right. And I'm just trying to make sure that, if you go on Fox and you start talking about space beam weapons, I'm sorry, Jim.
Likely to have me back anytime soon, Jay.
Right.
I've got a suggestion. Look at the last two pages on my website, the last two appendices, and it shows pictures of devices that already exist.
Yeah, I know. I saw those pictures, and it could be a spotlight that shoots light up into the air. I mean,
James, you made your point very, very clearly,
okay.
And I appreciate your calling, okay?
Okay, thanks.
Well done. Yeah, thank you for calling.
I appreciate it. All right.
Jackie in Georgia. Jackie, are you there?
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah. Hello, Jackie.
Go right ahead.
Judy, how you doing?
I think
this is a civil engineer who said that she might call in.
Oh,
yes.
Terrific.
Yes, I've spent as much time as I could looking through and going over the web page and everything for a long time, and you know, just picked random things out to sift through and go through some calculations. And I think Dr. Wood's been extremely generous with her calculations as far as, you know, giving everybody else the benefit of the doubt.
In other words, you're finding that the way she makes her case is actually all the more impressive because she's using values that would be considered to be generous to the possibility that she might be wrong.
Correct. Yeah, her you know, general safety factor in reverse, whatever you want to call that. It's you know, she's by all means been very, very generous and liberal with that.
Well,
and,
I think Judy has succeeded in opening a whole new area of research in relation to 9/11. I mean, this is, to me, utterly fascinating. I'm completely blown away. It's so original and it's so striking. It seems to me it potentially has the capacity to explain everything we know about what happened at the World Trade Center. It's utterly astonishing to me. So I'm thrilled to have this new area of exploration available to us. Don't you feel the same way, Jackie?
Yes, I do. I think it's wonderful. I mean, it was just too fast and too quick. Wow, two planes slammed in, all the jet fuel and everything burned up. Steel doesn't burn like that.
Right, of course. The whole government's approach has been completely ridiculous and absurd from the beginning. And it becomes more and more. The more we learn about it, you just look at these photographs that Judy has in her studies, and it's inconceivable that they could have been brought about by the flimsy causes that the government has proposed. There's no way in which the impact of jet planes or jet fuel fire or collapse on any of the scenarios that have been advanced by the government could possibly account for the depth of the destruction and devastation that was brought about on 9/11. It's just stunning. It requires a completely different approach.
Oh, yeah, and there's way too much difference in the first extremely lame supposedly attempt at bringing down the building, one of the buildings from like the basement, you know, way back. And then this big spectacular deal, I think, you know, they wanted us to be scared. So, you know, okay, well, we'll open up a little window and let y'all come in and do something. And it just kind of got a lot more than what they thought. But then now with this beam, I haven't had a chance to look over the complete paper.
Of course.
But I definitely hit the...
This is a preliminary impression. You're offering us a preliminary impression, Jackie.
I believe it. Yeah, I think I really do.
We got one more caller. Jackie, thanks so much. One more caller.
Thank you.
Vicky in Idaho. Vicky,
hi.
Are you there?
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to tell you, I don't see any reason why you can't mention it on Fox, because you can do it. You can do a search on the Internet for the phrase directed energy weapon, and you'll find just tons of very credible websites that...
Well, these Fox people don't know anything about science, you know. They're completely wrapped up in their own little views, which are based typically on ideology, and they have... Look, even Rush Limbaugh admitted that he's been carrying water for these people, and he's been giving falsehoods, and he doesn't think they were deserved to have water carried for them. I mean, how more explicit can we get that they've been lying and faking us and spreading disinformation? So... Listen, there's a lot to talk about with Fox. If they give me an opportunity, by God, I'm gonna use it. Judy, what would you like to add here?
Oh, there's a ton of stuff. I advise people to look at the website and look at the data for themselves. I laid out the first five pages are just the data.
Now, Judy, that one video that you have of the building turning to dust,
that is incredible. Isn't that something?
That is awesome.
Vicky, you're so right. That's just stunning. You can actually see it.
Yeah.
And on page three, I've added another couple of pictures showing, you can see the piece of steel flying through the air, turning into dust, or just dissolving as they're flying.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Great work, Judy. Just
Awesome.
Thank you for calling in, Vicki.
Okay, thank you.
Judy, tell us anything more you'd like to tell the audience here.
Look at the data and see if you can come up with any other explanation.
Okay, everybody, stand by. We're coming back for one last segment, and I have an announcement for you. Stand by. Jim Fetzer, Non-Random Thoughts. This is Jim Fetzer, your host on Non-Random Thoughts. Today I've had my special guest, Judy Wood. The announcement I have to make actually has three parts. This will be the last broadcast I make of Non-Random Thoughts on Republic Broadcasting Network next Saturday, the 18th. You will hear in this time slot Truth Jihad Radio with Kevin Barrett. I've been offered a two-hour-a-day, 5 days-a-week program on Genesis Communication Network. I prefer not to do it on Mondays and Fridays, so I invited Kevin Barrett to join me. So you're going to have two different opportunities to hear Kevin. We'll begin on the 20th of November. Kevin will broadcast on Mondays and Fridays. I will be Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday from 3 to 5 o'clock every day, Monday through Friday, Central Time, 3 to 5 Central Time. We'll announce it on Scholars for 9/11 Truth, and no doubt you'll be able to track it otherwise by going to Genesis. I want to thank Danny Romero and John Stettmiller for giving me a chance to come on Republic. Republic is simply terrific, and I've really thoroughly enjoyed it. Let me mention that first week coincides with the observance of the assassination of John F. Kennedy. I've done a huge amount of work on JFK that first week, therefore, on the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, I'm going to feature different experts on the death of JFK, and on the 22nd, in particular, David W. Mandick, who may be the leading expert on the scientific evidence in relation to the assassination of Jack Kennedy. In the following week, on Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, 28, 29, 30, I'm going to have three experts on 9/11 again, including on the 29th, Judy Wood. So I want you to know you're going to have opportunity to pursue these issues. We're going to go in great depth, as we like to do, and I look forward to having you come and check us out and see what you think. Once again, I want to thank Judy Wood. And, Judy, if you'd like to say a few words again to our audience, I'd be very pleased for you to do that.
My biggest advice is believe your eyes more than your ears.
Trust your own senses rather than what you're being told, right? The government,
correct.
Words are cheap. Words are cheap. We find this from this administration beginning to end. Everything they say is false, and we're able to prove it's false. In the case of 9/11, we have been blasting apart the claims that the government has been making from scratch. Just remember, we know from the mouth of George W. Bush at a press conference that Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11. We know from the Senate Intelligence Committee's own report based on its investigation that Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with al-Qaeda. He was actually tracking down al-Qaeda leaders and seeking to imprison them and even kill them. And we know from our own FBI from about 4 to 5 months ago, Ed Haas of the Muckraker Report contacted the FBI to ask why 9/11 wasn't listed on the wanted poster for Osama bin Laden, and he was told by the FBI that he was not listed for 9/11 because the FBI had no hard evidence to connect Osama bin Laden with the events of 9/11. Claire Brown of INN World Reports was so astonished by this, she called the FBI up and read the FBI representative Rex Toom what Ed Haas had written about it. She read him his exact words. Rex Toom confirmed they were accurate and reaffirmed that the FBI had no hard evidence connecting Osama bin Laden to the events of 9/11. That means that the government has been lying to us from scratch about 9/11. If Saddam Hussein had nothing to do with 9/11, and if Osama bin Laden had nothing to do with 9/11, then who did? We think it's the highest form of respect for the dead that we should try to find out what happened to them and why. And we are dedicated to that. And for the last time, I thank you on Republic Broadcasting Network. It's been a great pleasure, and thank you for listening to Non-Random Thoughts.